Okay, this is side two of session 24, recorded December 18, 2006. And we're going to continue reading this long review of cultural history by William Irwin Thompson, which is on pages 53 to 59 of my Fatty Communion book. And we're in the middle, well, two-thirds through this long quote. And picking up at the 18th century, Thompson says, in the 18th century, all nature was surrounded and miniaturized by culture. The wrought iron and glass structure of the Great Exhibition of 1851 surrounded the trees and fountains of Hyde Park and proclaimed for all the world to see that in the crystal palace of industrial technology, wild nature had been turned into a potted plant. Then in brackets he has, small wonder that most Victorian drawing rooms became civilized jungles of potted ferns. We historians now see all this, of course, with 20/20 hindsight. Then people at the time, back then, in the 18th, 19th century, people thought they were returning, and italicized, thought they were returning to nature in Romanticism. And the Great Exhibition featured such camouflage of industrialization as Sherwood Forest, Robin Hood chairs, Gothic sewing scissors, and rose-decorated sewing machines. Through the medieval court in the Crystal Palace, everyone grooved on nostalgia with cute little vines engraved on the legs of the machines. You can see it all in the world's first whole earth catalog, the catalog for the Great Exhibition itself, which was about 1851. Oh, yeah, we already have the date there.
Oh, no, I thought Stuart Brand came up with the whole earth catalog, but what, if he just took it over?
No, the catalog for the Great Exhibition was, I don't think, called the whole earth catalog, but the same principle of containing culture as it was achieved by 1851 is in the catalog. It's the culture of the world, or he's saying the new machines with the cultural patina, natural patina, nature images superimposed on the machine. So a sewing machine would be rose decorated.
Yeah.
And a chair would be called Sherwood Forest Robin Hood chairs. So the catalog for the Great Exhibition was replayed by the Whole Earth Catalog of Stuart Brand. But Stuart Brand is a later phase on the spirals.
Right.
In the phase of planetization, which he's coming up to here. He says, what was true of industrialization, meaning the catalog for the Great Exhibition, is true of planetization. A nostalgic and false consciousness. He's saying the Whole Earth Catalog is a nostalgic and false consciousness, which tries to camouflage the structure with a romantic content. All the artifacts and cultures of the world were miniaturized in Stuart Brand's Whole Earth Catalog, and although people grooved on wood stoves and fantasies of self-sufficiency, the catalog itself was absorbing everything into its giant collage. All culture was now being absorbed and miniaturized as the preparation for stuffing it into one of Stuart's beloved space colonies.
I think the term holeopathic retrieval applies here.
Yes, holeopathic is the android meme replaying in a miniaturized homeopathic and hologramic effect the whole history of everything that humans made.
Right.
So this is an archetypal retrieval in McLuhan's terms.
Mm-hmm.
Holeopathic means within the android meme hologram, which
right.
is a real vibrant reality. I don't mean it was fake by being a hologram. It just was an environment like a matrix that everybody lived in from the post-satellite 60s on. So Stuart's beloved space colonies, that reminds us of Robert Anton Wilson's Illuminatus trilogy, where the hero ends up taking off into space. That was Leary's vision in the mid-70s when he was getting out of jail, and Robert Anton Wilson was a pal of that vision.
Uh-huh.
And Stuart was into it too, I guess, the idea of going out into space and stuffing everything into our beloved space colonies.
Uh-huh.
So just as the Victorians had once grooved on rose-decorated sewing machines, so people now grooved on wood stoves, windmills, and solar collectors. But the folksy nostalgia merely camouflages a technological collectivization. Right? Technological collectivization.
Right.
You could say another word for the android meme. When the Coevolution Quarterly later openly came out in favor of Herman Kahn and O'Neill's space colonies, it showed the true skull and bones under the costume. I don't know if he was making reference to George Bush's skull and bones there. It showed the true skull and bones under the costume. All nature was to be turned into a potted plant in a tin can, and all culture was to be trashed into a television sensibility collage. So in a way, the Great Exhibition Catalog of 1851 is replaying nature as its content, but the Whole Earth Catalog replays all of the cultural phases into a little potted plant inside a television sensibility collage, right? So all culture was trashed, whereas the 19th century nature was trashed,
right,
and aestheticized. McLuhan said by the 1970s we were in a garbage apocalypse. That's probably what Thompson's saying here. All culture was to be trashed in a television sensibility collage. Interesting. A television sensibility collage is the very environment that evoked people's nostalgia for nature, and Thompson, as a New Age, categorized as a New Age prophet or New Age spokesman, was an effect of television and satellites. That he may be only half aware of, or he may be aware of it to a degree, but not with a fine understanding of what the television tactile sensibility was as expressed in Finnegan's Wake, and therefore Thompson's hesitation about Finnegan's Wake.
Didn't you once say that Stuart Brand's Whole Earth Catalog and his whole thing was running cover for some other operation that Stuart Brand was being a agent for?
That was LaRouche's view. He saw Stuart Brand, who was part of the Ken, he was a Ken Kesey prankster, Mary prankster, part of the Grateful Dead acid test.
Mm.
So that,
no, the Global Business Network, didn't you? When he,
oh, yeah, in the 90s, Stuart Brand was the guy behind Wired magazine, that whole digital retrieval.
Mm-hmm. But that wasn't until the 90s.
Yeah. They decided in the late 60s that drugs didn't work as a revolution to change consciousness, or they thought they hadn't changed it the way they wanted to change it. So they said, let's do computers, make them the new drug. Uh-huh. And then that was apotheosized. An apotheosis in the 90s with the digital dot-com boom.
Tim Leary televising his death over the Internet.
Right. Okay, so the last paragraph of this section, he says, but the Whole Earth Catalog and the Coevolution Quarterly do not express the full dimensions of planetization. Just as I say that McLuhan would say that Thompson doesn't express the full dimensions of planetization, Thompson is saying that about his hippie buddies. In what Sri Aurobindo would call, quote, the descent of the supramental, there is a new level of human consciousness which is now surrounding, absorbing, and miniaturizing the old civilized and technological consciousness. Is this, and that's the Android meme. It shrinks and makes the user as content dominant, right? It makes you... Did you hear... did I send it out to you? The YouTube. The person of the year, according to Time magazine this year, is you.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. That's the apotheosis of Bob's pattern.
Right.
And miniaturizing the old civilized and technological consciousness. As the supramental surrounds the old mental level, which would be visual space or writing mind or industrial mind, which would be print mind, as the supramental surrounds the old mental level, the mind becomes an artifact and intellection becomes a mind dance. Now that's pretty good. That's understanding that we're not in an information society in terms of matching inputs with outputs or matching minds. Everybody is performing the matching function as a dance and pretending to communicate. This is a very good statement. The mind becomes an artifact, and intellection becomes a mind dance. Basically, he probably means left hemisphere becomes a mind dance. And so the whole scientific art world becomes subsumed under the theme that Marshall says, culture becomes business. Culture becomes our business. So the information society becomes a game,
uh-huh,
or a dance and a ritual.
We don't know exactly what he means by supramental. Whatever.
I think he's trying to say colossal percept, not conceptual.
Mm-hmm.
So the old mental level or conceptual level, the mind becomes an artifact, and concepts become a mind dance. That's new fads of ideas every 6 months.
Right.
As McLuhan said back in the early 70s, the businessman is the person interested in ideas. Now, before, there was a split between commerce and the mind, commerce and art. Commerce and the Scholars, but they merge under global satellite conditions. Thompson sees that. Then he says ratio becomes logos once again, and the central icon of the econometric state, the dollar sign, falls on its side, and the bars that cross it, meaning cross the sign, melt and turn it into a sign for infinity. Now, McLuhan would say infinity is the image for visual space. Eternity is the image for post-visual space. So Thompson, on my level of interpretation, totally follows the alphabetic script. He is pretending to be alphabetic, but he is addicted to the alphabetic and uses its effects unconsciously from McLuhan's point of view.
Why is infinity visual and eternity post-visual?
Infinity is the repeated image, you know. Remember the old Aunt Jemima box where you'd look at the image and the image of itself would be inside the,
right,
the box?
Right.
It goes off into the horizon, like visual perspective.
Mm.
Whereas eternity is a resonating acoustic sphere where all times and futures are present.
Mm-hmm.
There's no perspective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So eternity is non-perspectival and infinity is perspectival. Now, a mathematician would say, no, that's, you know, they would quibble over what I'm saying, but we're dealing with cultural stereotypes, cultural memes here.
Mm-hmm.
So, ratio becomes logos. I think he means by logos what McLuhan writes in the introduction to the Laws of Media, the book done with his son, that logos is the acoustic sphere. That was the original meaning of the logos.
Really?
Yes, and it became a visual bounded space.
I think of it as being...
Let me finish the definition here. It became the visual bounded space, the effect of the phonetic alphabet, and was termed ratio. Right? Ratio becomes logos. But most people think logos is visual space and myth is non-visual space.
You think it sort of stems from the root logic, logos.
Right. You'd think that, but that's not the original meaning.
So
he's being technically correct here. But on the surface, people who wouldn't know that would say, well, ratio is more of a pre-literate sensibility. That's the analogical proportion of ratios among ratios.
Mm-hmm.
So ratio becomes logos. But again, that's his special, that's his cultural training as a professor of classics and humanism that he did at MIT.
Mm-hmm.
So... he has his meanings for those terms, but other people might see them differently.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to... he's now going to deal with the Pacific shift in my next quote. So we're going to deal in Pacific shift, which comes out sort of like 10 years later after what we just read. What we just read is his thinking in between 75, 76, 77. Now, he drops the core geometric vision that he had in the late 70s. He moves to his temple retreat in the mountains of Colorado, and then he ends up in Switzerland in 83. He meets Margulis and Lovelock and Abraham and Perella in the late 70s, early 80s. He has a conference with them in 81. And he's adopting more scientific metaphors for his emphasis, which he sticks to. With these phases, he's going to stick to, but he's going to refine it. And so he admits he has a bias. He's going to get out of that. And so Pacific Shift is his new self. The book comes out in 1985, published by the Sierra Club Books in San Francisco. It's called Pacific Shift. And he's going to deal with the Reagan era. I mean, it's a different world in the 80s from what he was dealing with in the 70s. And, you know, I would say it's the Android meme fully rampant in the 80s. And he's got to deal with that. The New Age Aquarian conspiracy that he was seen as a spokesman of has sort of collapsed. So we're going to see in this quote him attempting to adapt to it. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is from the book Pacific Shift, and its pages 1, 2, and 32. Two paragraphs. All right. You want to go with it?
Yeah. Politics unbound from the nation state is the world that's after us. taking hold of our poetic imaginations in this century, but making claim to our political allegiances in the next. No escape except annihilation can protect us from this ancient Greek necessity, for all our efforts to avoid changing only seem to have thrust changes upon us. It will not be in the rational forms of the Enlightenment that world political leaders will come together in some planetary constitutional convention, for such conscious volitional activity would require relaxed openness in the future. In the late 70s, humanity everywhere willed to reject transformation and reassert a new and more hysterical form of fundamentalism of the past, from the Islamic fundamentalism of the Shiites to the industrial fundamentalism of the Reaganites. And so humanity has precipitated its collective unconscious into the world as part of its itself. It sees as, quote, other, and calls the environment. Of necessity, then, it will be in the form of a globally damaged ecology that the new world body politic will experience itself, not as the legalistic creation of patriarchal states, but as the unconscious manifestation of the planet, not the reactionary involutions of
Oranos
that seek to abort all change, but the creative evolution of Gaia that emasculates old gods with new and subtle technologies. And then in parentheses, an earlier version of this book published as a pamphlet by the Findhorn Foundation in 1982, I did rather naively imagine that some sort of planetary constitutional convention was a possibility for the future. That pamphlet version was based upon lectures I gave at Findhorn December 1979, and so I focused on such current events as Jerry Brown's campaign for the American presidency and Zbigniew Brzezinski's leadership of the Trilateral Commission. In entirely rewriting From Nation to Emanation.
That's the title of the original pamphlet, and now it's called Pacific Shift. So in entirely rewriting From Nation to Emanation. So he's talking about the change that I was telling you about that he went through.
Right. And doubling the length of the manuscript, I have changed my mind as I have watched the rise of Christian and Islamic fundamentalisms. I can see now that a planetary constitutional convention is too ethnocentric a projection, too derivative from Western Enlightenment values. I have tried to darken my excessively bright New Age projections to bring the new perspective more in line with the world of Khomeini's Iran, Thatcher's Great Britain, and Reagan's United States of America. I've also taken out some esoteric material that, in pamphlet form, was intended only for specific context of Findhorn Foundation's interest in the Western esoteric tradition.
Right. Now, you see where he goes through a change. Now, McLuhan would never make a change like that, other than that he claimed he changed after The Mechanical Bride failed. And he decided that book came out in 51. His whole approach was obsolete, and he had to develop a new approach. It's true he developed a new approach, and in a sense, maybe he's admitting a change, but it's a technical, critical, and analytical form of change, whereas Thompson, product of the me decade of the 70s, is talking about a personal opinion change, so to speak. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas McLuhan,
Thompson was making some predictions based on the political climate. He didn't expect the political climate to go from Jerry Brown to Ayatollah Khomeini and Reagan. So that the fact that we went fundamentalism changed the context, and so his outlook had to change. Now,
let me tell you something about that. Now, McLuhan predicted Reagan in 1975, 76 as coming.
Mm-hmm.
he didn't have to adapt. McLuhan understood what the effects were in the computer environment. Thompson was not looking at the effects. He's looking at the content, and he's adopting his view in relation to content changes. There's the difference. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm saying there's the difference between McLuhan and Thompson. Thompson is more attractive to thinkers that might have been interested in McLuhan than McLuhan by the 70s and 80s, even though if you understand McLuhan, you might have a better handle on what was coming. But McLuhan's content became limited compared to the new interest in the subtle bodies and the astral plane and the moving out of the Western Catholic model or Protestant model that Thompson rides on.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So we want to look at the subtleties here, the disservices and services. Now, I think last week we looked at the quote by Croker on the Enlightenment values that Croker's team was going after on page 84 at the top. He says, Adorno and Horkheimer's Dialectic of Enlightenment was written in response to the outbreak of the fascist mind, whereas Croker's book, The Postmodern Scene, is a response to the outbreak again of the Dialectic of Enlightenment. Thompson recognizes that he's replaying certain Enlightenment values, at least in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice on my chart, I have Thompson in the politics quadrant. A lot of talk about politics in this quote. First sentence, politics unbound from the nation state is the world that's after us. Now, he's concerned about political harmony, and therefore he imagined a planetary constitutional convention. But he realizes that that procedure is not that's too bureaucratic for the chaotic world of the early 80s. So he's adapting to that. And he wouldn't be able to say what the changes were other than he would say an ecological view. He'd take an ecological view of the cause. He'd say we're projecting our pollution out in front of us and saying that that is the uniting factor in the global village. Right? He says that, of necessity, then, it will be in the form of a globally damaged ecology that the new world body politic will experience itself. There is talking about politics again. Not as a legalistic creation of patriarchal states, but as the unconscious manifestation of the planet. So he's projecting an image of nature onto the environment. But McLuhan would say, no, the environment is the mixed media of computer, satellites, TV, and the digital, what I call the Android meme.
Yeah. Well, but remember when Reagan said we should have Star Wars because imagine UFOs come and attack us and imagine how that would unite the world against the common enemy.
Right.
Well, now the common enemy is this global climate change and the greenhouse effect and the melting of the Arctic ice caps and all that kind of stuff. This is something that probably is uniting people around the planet. And it's a first nature image as opposed to the UFO, which is a second nature image.
Right. The McLuhan response is that people are projecting an effect of the Android meme and YouTube and the wonderful digital environment we have today through MySpace and your Palm Pilot, that projects a sense of chaos and anarchy and the centralized vision of humanism projects the fear as global warming. Nobody's going to be able to agree on whether the global warming is happening or not. They're just going to line up and have a civil war.
Oh, everybody agrees it's happening. People don't agree why it's happening. Some people say, oh, it's just we're going through some kind of cycle and it's got nothing to do with
right.
releasing poisons into the atmosphere.
Yeah, and they're not going to agree on why it's happening since Western man needs causes.
Yeah.
McLuhan said Western man is defined by the question why. Previous cultures, pre-literal cultures, don't have a why. That may be arguable, but that's what he said. So we're going to argue over the why, and all kinds of things are going to go on and have effects regardless of our despondency. And in a sense, maybe good developments. New technologies like cold fusion will solve these problems. But the projection of a global warming is the image, the icon that everybody's fighting over. We're not looking at why we think that's happening. people can argue why global warming seems to be happening, but why do people think that global warming is happening?
Well, people that are, the more liberal-minded, democratic-minded type people think that, you know, we're polluting the atmosphere and it's creating these greenhouse gases are holding in the heat from the sun. And then people who are, you know, just out there want to, you know, they're more the Republican big business guys and they don't want to deal with the notion that having to, you know, we're not going to restrict business and commerce and automobile production because we don't want to believe it has anything to do with the problem. It's just, and then they come up with patterns of that, well, this is, well, if we look back in history, we can see these patterns happen every 2,000 years, and we're just in a pattern that's got nothing to do with human beings.
Right, and we have to remember that the population explosion people thought was happening in the 50s was not really happening compared to the effect of the media implosion. So McLuhan said the real danger was population implosion. Now, we talk about the warming of the planet, but maybe what is really warming us is the effect of the new hot media.
I was just thinking, when there's 6 billion people on the planet, and you think about that question, how many angels can you fit on the head of a pin?
Yeah.
Well, how many human beings can you fit on the head of a pin? 6 billion, obviously.
Right. Yes. You can fit them all. And so we've moved out of cool media into hot media generally, the new fragmenting users' content.
Mm-hmm.
Voluntary ESP is my phrase for the post-cool media, cool media being cloned ESP. So as we move into hot media, even though it's not just hot, it's actually cool and hot, but tends toward individualization and fragmentation, the hot effect may be why we're projecting, the digital hot effect may be why we're projecting global warming in the present environment. I mean, weren't people worrying about a coming ice age in the 60s when it was a cool or cold environment?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you talked about how the Twin Towers collapsed because so many people were watching it.
That's a heat phenomenon.
Yeah, and I think to some measure, the temperature is an effect of the collective conscious thermostat.
Right. You could say that as humans are fragmented by digitalization, human consciousness compensates by screaming for a new imploded unity. So people all around the world want peace as an image of our fusion, our unity, to counterbalance the fragmentation that the digital world brings in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're heating up as a counterbalance, a sensory ratio adjustment.
And it's in the hottest part of one of the hottest parts of the world, in the Middle East, it's heating up to the point where everything's exploding all over the place.
Right. Hot, as McLuhan would say, hot media are explosive, not impulsive.
You turn on the TV every day, somebody blew up a building, a car, or whatever. Things are just blowing up all over the place.
Which is a metaphor for someone.
It's a metaphor for friction. It means that we're at that place where we're pushing friction to the extreme, and maybe it's getting ready to flip into its opposite, which would be the cold fusion.
Right, and so whenever anybody puts up their MySpace website or their broadcast themselves on YouTube, they've exploded into the cloned ESP with their fragmenting producer mania of creating their own digital content. So we have, you could say that every new kid that creates their YouTube in America, you could check over in the Middle East and see someone just blew their chemical body up.
Mm.
So the explosiveness of the digital, as opposed to the implosion of the TV age,
mm-hmm.
The explosion of the digital is seeing explosion all over the place in the chemical body. So that's a pattern that some would say is cartoon-like, but that's the kind of pattern McLuhan would make. Thompson makes similar patterns, but basing it on cultural archetypes, not on media archetypes, though he later... It's interesting, in this book, Pacific Shift, he starts bringing in McLuhan again. He has a chart of McLuhan effects.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't emphasize McLuhan too much in the 70s, other than the fact that the previous environment becomes an art form. Now he's using, in Pacific Shift, both Marx, Karl Marx, and McLuhan. He will then move to other people, but even enhance on McLuhan in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done this quote. Is there any more to say about it? So the point is, he's admitting a change in response to the world. McLuhan would not admit a change in response to the world. He would see why the world changed and create an anti-environment to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's different from what Thompson's looking for, an anti-environment, but he seems taken aback.
Right. Well, he's not dealing. He's working with.
McLuhan in the 70s predicted America would go right wing. Thompson did. Thompson was not paying attention to McLuhan and did not know that McLuhan predicted Reagan and right wingism surfacing. If he was aware of it, he didn't take it seriously. But he eventually has to take it seriously.
Right.
And McLuhan is explaining why America would go right wing.
Yeah.
So, shall we reread this again?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to read through it. And thinking of Thompson, in a way, he's left hemisphere, concerned about politics and bureaucracy, and harmonizing the national bureaucracies, therefore having a planetary constitutional convention. But he projects a damaged ecology as the reason why it's obsolete, as the cause for the convention being obsolete. People didn't need to be bureaucratically harmonized. They were already harmonized by ecological disaster. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Thompson, from Pacific Shift, pages 1 and 2 and 32. Politics unbound from the nation-state is the world that's after us. Now note that, politics unbound, bureaucracy unbound, right? POB is unbound. And he says it's the world after us, but it's also chasing us. Politics unbound from the nation-state is the world that's after us, taking hold of our poetic imaginations in this century, but making claim to our political allegiances in the next. Big emphasis on politics there. No escape except annihilation can protect us from this ancient Greek necessity, for all our efforts to avoid changing only seem to have thrust changes upon us. Well, he's just talking about change in a vague term. I was going to, at the beginning of this section, talk about that quote, in the 18th century, all nature was surrounded and miniaturized by culture. I forgot to mention that. That's a very vague word to say culture.
Mm-hmm.
What does it refer to? Thompson means content, I think. But McLuhan would include both content and form. So another vague word here is changes. McLuhan would say that he knows why changes happen. You can determine the characteristic of the change from the medium that evoked it. And then LaRouche would say how we need to make changes, not have these oligarchic-inspired changes thrust upon us, but to bring in real change by inventing new hardware. That would be LaRouche's answer here. All right, so for all our efforts to avoid changing only seem to have thrust changes upon us. I don't know who he could say is avoid changing. All kinds of changes are going on in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but there is a crying out for stability. And that is the...
That's what causes the fundamentalisms to rise.
The neoconservative reaction. And McLuhan might say, yes, you guys are sensible in demanding a slowdown of the plunge into the Android meme, that you're going about it the wrong way. Thompson is not seeing neoconservatism as a balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
He's seeing it as a negative, hysterical reaction.
Right. He's a bit of a rebel when it comes to the principle of the authoritarian.
Right. Whereas McLuhan, he can operate in any modality. He's not a rebel.
Maybe that when things get too chaotic, it's time for the authoritarian to come in and make things more conservative. There may be a reason for that.
Yep. Even though McLuhan believed that that's a knee-jerk response, you're not looking at the figure ground. If you look at the figure ground, you could have a more ecological reaction.
Right.
Ecological in terms of media, not just nature ecology.
Yeah.
Both the
liberal rebellion against the authoritarian and the authoritarian desire to clamp down in a fundamental way, those are both hysterical reactions.
Yep, yep. So you're seeing that Thompson seems to be a liberal here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Thompson says it will not be in, remember, liberalism came out of the Enlightenment, and that's what we're going to get in this paragraph. It will not be in the rational forms of the Enlightenment that world political leaders will come together in some planetary constitutional convention. For such conscious volitional activity would require a relaxed openness to the future. And in the late 1970s, humanity everywhere willed to reject transformation and reassert a new and more historical form of the fundamentalism of the past, from the Islamic fundamentalism of the Shiites to the industrial fundamentalism of the Reaganites. So he recognizes the weakness in liberalism. He's trying to figure out a way to move into the third zone. And so humanity, so that you're outside of the dialectic of left versus right, okay? And so humanity, Thompson says, has precipitated its collective unconscious into the world as the part of itself it sees as other and calls the environment. So he's saying the environment is part of us, but we're claiming it's the other. McLuhan would agree with Thompson that the environment is us. But it's a technological environment, whereas Thompson's projecting a natural image as the environment. Of necessity, then, it will be in the form of a globally damaged ecology, rather than the android meme, that the new world body politic will experience itself. It will experience itself, he says, in the form of a globally damaged ecology, not as the legalistic creation of patriarchal states, you know, bureaucracy, but as the unconscious manifestation of the planet. Well, the planet, McLuhan say, would consist of all the technologies coming together at that point, the total sum of the technologies. That was his definition of consciousness. If you remember way back there, see if I can find it, he says, a cliché is an act of consciousness. Total consciousness is the sum of all the clichés of all the media or technologies we probe with. So that's from the book Clichéd Archetype, page 150. So McLuhan is talking about consciousness as a sum of all the technologies we are living with, whereas Thompson limits consciousness to the cliché of nature, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or the planet. So the new world body politic will experience itself not as the legalistic creation of patriarchal states, but as the unconscious manifestation of the planet, not the reactionary involutions of Uranos that seek to abort all change, but the creative evolution of Gaia that emasculates old gods with new and subtle technologies. Now, new and subtle technology would be like cold fusion or some of the newer medical technologies. That is an interesting phrase, the new and subtle technologies. I would say that's almost like the electric technology getting close to the extending the chi or etheric body of humans. So he, even though he's being slightly reactionary here, he is picking up on the new. He's not totally a Luddite, right?
Mm-hmm.
In an earlier version of this book, published as a pamphlet by the Findorn Foundation in 1982, I did rather naively imagine that some sort of planetary constitutional convention was a possibility for the future. That pamphlet version was based upon lectures I gave at Findhorn in December of 1979. Of course, Findhorn was the archetypal New Age center in Scotland, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they had mediums there who would talk to the plants and supposedly grow better food in their gardens around Findhorn. So
grow huge tomatoes.
What?
They grew huge tomatoes and cucumbers and things that were like five times the size of normal vegetables.
Right, so Thompson is... he's been involved with Findhorn at this point, you know, by five, seven years. So he gave a lecture in December of 1979. No, I'm saying, okay, he's writing this in 1985, so he's been involved with Findhorn by 72, 73, 74 period, so more than 8 years, 10 years. That pamphlet version was based upon lectures I gave at Findhorn in December of 79, and so I focus on such current events as Jerry Brown's campaign for the American presidency and Zbigniew Brzezinski's leadership of the Trilateral Commission. So that would be the 1980 election, which Reagan wins. In entirely rewriting from nation to emanation...
Who makes up the Trilateral Commission?
Zbigniew Brzezinski and David Rockefeller formed that in 73.
Hmm.
And so...
Who's the third in the Trilateral? That's two.
Well, there's hundreds of them, but the main point is the other one was Prince Bernard of the Netherlands. He was involved in forming the Bilderbergers, but probably overlapped into the Trilateral Commission. But the point here, this is, many people said that Carter in 1976 election was funded by the Trilateral Commission. That's what LaRouche said about Carter.
Mm-hmm.
So the Trilateral Commission becomes a cliche in the media throughout the late 70s. So now we're, Jerry Brown, I think, is running in 79-80.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about the 79-80 period. And Reagan's going to win that in the fall of 1980. In entirely rewriting from nation to emanation, that's the original script, and doubling the length of the manuscript, I have changed my mind as I have watched the rise of Christian and Islamic fundamentalism, which basically started in 79. The fundamentalist Jerry Falwell, more majority, started in 79. The Khomeini Islamic fundamentalist movement took over the embassy in November 79, right? So it's the end of 79, early 80s. And he's commenting on them right when they're happening in December of 79. So he's always commenting on the news.
Mm-hmm.
I can see now that, the Planetary Constitutional Convention is too ethnocentric a projection. We won't say too left hemisphere. Too derivative from Western Enlightenment values. That's hyper-visual and kinetic space. I have tried to darken my excessively bright New Age projections to bring the perspective more in line with the world of Khomeini's Iran, Thatcher's Great Britain, and Reagan's United States of America. I've also taken out some esoteric material that, in pamphlet form, was intended only for the specific context of the Findorn Foundation's interest in the Western esoteric tradition. That may have been the geometry stuff that his colleague, his name was Keith Critchlow, not sure, who was a member of the Lindisfarne Group, was the student of sacred geometry, and is now funded by Prince Charles. I think that happened in the 90s. But Thompson breaks off from this guy, Critchlow, and doesn't want to work with sacred geometry anymore when he moves into his interest in science in the early 80s. So that may have been the material he took out.
Mm.
So there may have been other stuff in there, maybe about yoga stuff or stuff, that kind of thing that we did in an earlier quote. But I do know that he says at some point that he had to, part of his 70s self was dropping the 70s sacred interest in sacred geometry. Okay?
Hmm, okay.
Now, what's interesting is the next quote, which comes from...
We're going to have time to do the next quote. We've got 5 minutes. You might be able to read it, but we're not going to be able to go
into it. Yeah, let me just read through it, because it gives you... He's now, this is based on something he's writing in the mid-80s. Pacific Shift comes out in the mid-80s, but it's about his change in the late 70s, early 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here he is responding to the mid-80s in a magazine called In Context. It's like an article, and it's called, written in the winter 85-86 period, and it's called It's Already Begun. So I just want to... show you how he interprets. He has a different aspect about what's going on by the middle 80s. So here's his quote. I'll run through it. Everybody looks at the King's Road in London and they see these punks. These people that are irresponsible, vulgar, living on the dole, parasites on the industrial system. Everybody looks at Concords, the airplane, and nuclear power and says this is a positive investment in developing the national or the European economy. Look at all the money that's put into products like Concords and nuclear power. If you really believe in nuclear power, hawk your spouse and your mortgage and your house and take everything you've got and buy shares in Wilco. You'll have it coming to you in what you'll get from that kind of capitalism. But now look at what these funny teenagers have done. They have created a music industry, a magazine industry, a fashion industry, and a music video industry. Add up all the informational transactions from that planetary culture of information and divide it by the dole, and you'll see an incredible return on investment. But we don't look at these kids as the J.P. Morgans and captains of industry of the modern world. We look at them as parasites, aliens, predators, and the rest of it. That's because we can't see punk as the working class transformed into an art form. There's our theme, a class turned into an art form, the old McLuhan theme. These kids are smarter than Maggie Thatcher. They know no one needs them. They're not needed as slaves in the old system. They're not needed as serfs in the medieval system. And they're not needed as proletariat in the industrial system. Nobody needs them. What have they done? They've created a role for themselves in the planetary culture by doing for industrialism what the circus did for pre-industrialism. Now, that's a really good quote.
We ain't going to work on Maggie's farm no more.
Yeah, we're going to sell images of fighting against it.
Mm-hmm.
in magazines, music, and video. So he's now catching up to McLuhan. He sees the informational economy. He's seeing, he's not being a purist, he's being more interested in the political economy, not in developing a yogic enlightenment. That's still, personally, he still meditates and does yoga, but he's taking on the 80s and not making a value judgment along the cliches that Al Gore and maybe even Zappa would make.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of value judgment that this is the world getting dumber and dumber. Thompson doesn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
That's good on his part. That's useful.
Yeah. Well, you know, people like Al Gore aren't going to be trying to target the 13-year-olds because they can't vote. Anyway.
They're going to target the old industrial system.
Yeah.
Because the voting world is part of the industrial system. But it has no power anymore. The informational MTV world has taken over. That's where the power is.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids, again, are, as McLuhan said, the kids get there first.
Yeah. Well, hasn't that always been true down through history?
No. There weren't even kids in the Victorian era. The kids were called adolescents. They weren't teenagers. Teenager means involvement. These kids were told to be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
But way back in medieval time, the kids were little adults, and they weren't fragmented like industrial society did to children.
Right.
They were part of the culture and suffered along with everybody in the hardship.
Right. Yeah.
So you have the middle-class bourgeois world of the 19th century, and the 20th century gradually erodes that so that kids become part of the informational environment and part of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But not in terms of the chemical body being a slave. That's reserved for those that don't make it into MTV and have to work in McDonald's.
Right.